Council are getting situated. I'll welcome you to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. My name is John Rodenberg. I'm presiding today. With me are Judges Ross and Klapacki. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument under our rules, and you'll have, appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if the appellant wishes to use that time. When you approach the podium, give us your name and the party you represent. We're recording the proceedings, and so we want that for the recording. The podium is adjustable. There's a little toggle switch on there somewhere. You can adjust it up and down, so make sure you're comfortable with the height of the podium. Whenever appellant is ready, you may proceed.
Excuse me. I've had a cold and I've been coughing. Good morning. My name is Pete Sandberg, and I represent the appellate Bill Furlow. On June 17, 2017, Jane Doe posted on social media, on her social media account, a photograph showing a woman sitting in a chair with a caption, and with the caption. The overarching narrative or theme to our claim is simply this, is a nurse's aide was talking publicly about Vanessa Furlow's mental health, and we say it's wrong and it violates this statute. This posting took place on her social media. Good chance that her friends would identify her as Jane Doe. They would know Jane Doe as Jane Doe. They would, a good chance that they would know where she works, what she does, and what this post is all about.
Before I get into the merits, let me ask this question. You have, in effect, given her name in these papers. If we're to write a decision, is there some request that we not identify her in the decision?
No, there isn't. There isn't. I don't see any necessity for it. We aren't requesting it. But that does, that is the segue into my second point. What is the purpose of this statute? The purpose of this statute isn't to protect Vanessa Furlow's identity. There are two separate definitions in this statute, one dealing with a health record and one dealing with identifiable information. What is protected under this statute isn't the identity of Vanessa Furlow. What is protected under this statute is the health record. I think the issue that stands squarely before this court is whether or not what was posted in this caption qualifies, constitutes, or meets the definition of a health record as defined under the statute. And all we're saying here is that a nurse's aide for Madonna Subban, who publicly talks about Vanessa Furlow's mental health, isn't protected under this statute. Now, I'm going to be short here. There are, in reading through the respondent's brief, they cite a number of cases that deal with this whole term of persons. What we're saying distinguishes the case that presently stands in front of you, and these two or three earlier decisions, unpublished decisions by the Court of Appeals, is that none of those cases dealt with a nursing home under Chapter 144. And this statute provides a specific definition of what constitutes a provider, and none of the three earlier decisions decided that question. What stands before you is squarely the question that is raised concerning the statutory construction. And all we're saying there is, look, it's much like a dance card. If the state of Minnesota names the provider as the first person on their dance card, I don't know of a rule of construction or interpretation that permits this court to completely excuse what they have explicitly stated in the statute and say, well, we're going to take out the eraser and we're going to scrape that off. Now, those are just simply my 3 points. It seems to me that the complaint touches upon the essence of what is needed for an action against a provider under this statute. And the element here isn't the identity of Vanessa Furlow. The element here is that this publication on social media to this nurse's aide's friends constitutes the unauthorized release.
But that's only providing it's a health record. Right?
I agree. I couldn't agree with you more.
So what about this whole transaction that shows her present physical or mental health condition? That's the definition of a health record, isn't it?
Well, it's included in the definition of a health record. It doesn't make too much difference to the legislature whether what is disclosed, whether the unauthorized disclosure by a nursing aide concerns a patient's physical health, their emotional health, or their mental health.
Well, what about this circumstance that shows that it was a health record as opposed to something else? If it wasn't physical condition, if it wasn't mental condition, well, what was it that made it a health record?
Well, I'm saying what makes it a health record is the statement that she used in the posting. The people, her friends on social media would identify her as Jane Doe. They know where she works, what she does, and they have a pretty good idea of when she says, this little
You're
shit.
You're saying that it identified her as being a patient at a particular health facility?
I'm saying that the people who saw her post on social media, Judge, are her friends. They know her. They know where she works. They know what they do. They know what she's talking about. And this expression bears upon the mental health of Vanessa Furlow.
What is it in the expression that would relate to your client's mental health?
It would relate to my, simply stated, she's an elderly woman, she's old, and she's being treated as though she has the mentality of a toddler. And if that doesn't bear on someone's mental health, if that isn't offensive to the mental health of anyone, I don't know what is.
Well, what's communicated is that she pulled the fire alarm.
Certainly she pulled the fire
alarm.
That's
the substance of it.
That's the substance of what she did. That's her conduct.
Right.
And it's the characterization that I point to chiefly. Her characterization of what this elderly woman did in the setting where you would find them, that in itself would show that what she's doing is characterizing the mental health of this woman.
The statute is clear. It has to relate to mental health. And in this case, the communication is, there's a description, a pejorative description of your client as apparently regarding her pejorative reference to her size. It refers to her as little, and then an expletive, and it indicates that she pulled the fire alarm.
I'm saying that this expression. I'm not saying that this expression conclusively says this or conclusively excludes that. What I'm saying is that there is enough evidence here that I think that it's left up to a jury to interpret whether or not this expression was made bearing upon this patient's mental health. I'm saying that this touches on mental health. And it touches enough to survive this motion. I'm saying that all the elements necessary to fulfill this cause of action have been stated in this complaint.
What if it said everything is the same except the conduct, instead of pulling the fire alarm, was dropped a pitcher of orange juice or whatever? Same result? I'm trying to get a sense of what it is that connects this to mental health. What part of the
I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you that this is textural, but when we start looking at texture, And just exactly what it is that Jane Doe is addressing here. And I mean, this is a Rule 12 motion. I haven't had a chance to do any discovery. I haven't been able to get a chance to get from Madonna Summits the name of this nurse, so we can just find out for ourselves what it is she was seeking to accomplish by posting this on Facebook. All I'm saying to this court is that this complaint contains a sufficient statement of those elements that are necessary for this cause of action to go forward.
Well, to survive Rule 12,
excuse me,
you'd have to establish that it's possible that any evidence could be produced consistent with your theory, right?
Yeah. Yes, and there is enough here. I'm saying that this is textual. This is something that doesn't conclusively fall on the left-hand side or conclusively fall on the right-hand side, but it is textural enough such that if I'm not wasting your time or I'm not wasting Madonna Summons' time in moving ahead with this claim and doing the discovery that is necessary to get to the bottom of this.
Are you, just as I break down the definition statute of healthcare record,
yeah,
are you saying that this communication related to your client's mental health condition, that that's something that can be drawn from it? Or are you saying that the communication relates to the provision of health care to the patient?
No, I'm saying that it relates to her mental health. And as the statute reads, it says or. It doesn't say you must fall or touch on each one of these elements. Whatever it is that's posted or
right,
whatever it is that's said touches on the physical, mental, and emotional health of the patient. But it says or. It doesn't say and. And it says whether oral or recorded in any form or medium. Now, that's broad. And all I'm saying is that what I have stated in this complaint is enough to satisfy somebody's appetite that it's worthwhile for us to move ahead with discovery and get to the bottom of this, because this is very offensive and shouldn't be allowed to stand in any nursing home.
I agree that it's offensive. I think
yep,
the respondent agrees that it's offensive. If you're going to... The health record definition actually also says it relates to future physical, mental conditions of a patient. I mean, if you take a picture of a person eating a huge cheeseburger and say he's destined to have a heart attack in the future, is that a violation of the Health Records Act?
No, it wouldn't, because it doesn't touch upon... It doesn't touch upon what's needed in order to... I'm stumbling over my words here.
Well, because it says future, it seems like it might under your reasoning.
If you said he's already got a serious problem with his cholesterol and he shouldn't be eating a Big Macs because this is going to happen to him in the future, the example that you're using doesn't say anything about his current physical health.
You have to. Future's in the statute.
I don't have an answer for your question. I'm not trying to skate around it, Judge. I'm not.
I understand that, but I'm just trying to test the limits of what how much inference is permitted before you can get to the finding that it's a health record.
I got to deal with my case. I don't know. I know enough about mental illness in this, or mental health in this case, to deal with Vanessa Furlow.
Fair enough.
Somebody that's suffering from high cholesterol. Better talk to somebody else, and preferably somebody that's got a diploma on their wall that reads MD rather than JD. Yeah. Anything else?
It appears not. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal after the respondent makes their
argument.
Thank you
much. Appreciate it.
Respondent?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Ashley Tronson of Frederickson and Byron, and I represent the respondent, Madonna Summit of Byron. It bears reminding that this case is brought under the Minnesota Health Records Act. Petitioner Mr. Furlow asserted a single cause of action under this statute, alleging alleged unauthorized disclosure of a health record. In order to even state a claim under this cause of action, there needs to be a couple of things. First and foremost, there needs to be a health record, as that term is defined by the statute, that was disclosed without authorization. And then second, there needs to be some sort of mechanism of liability to hold the defendant accountable for the alleged disclosure.
Do you agree that a photograph is information recorded in some form?
A photograph in general, yes, can be a health record. Certainly a CT scan or an X-ray are photographs and could be a health record. Additionally, in other courses of treatment, I could envision situations in which a photograph may make it into the health record, yes.
Well, I think that Judge Ross's question was to just the little segment of the definition that a health record is any information, whether oral or recorded in any form or medium. It seems like a photograph does all photographs are information recorded in a form or medium.
Right. We're not disputing that a photograph cannot amount to a health record.
So then the question is whether this photograph relates to any of the optional related to provisions of the statute. So if there's why doesn't the statute, in the context that it was given, a nurse wearing scrubs, photographs an individual, and then communicates in a way that I think would inform anyone who knows the nurse that this must be something that happened in her workplace.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor.
Why is that? That she with which part?
That there's a lot of assumptions there. I disagree with the fact that a photograph taken by an individual who may or may not be dressed in scrubs, yes, it looks like it, but it takes the assumption that, number one, she's dressed in scrubs. Number two, that she's in a healthcare environment. Number three, that the person that she's taking a picture of is a patient. Number four, that this patient somehow suffers from any sort of mental health, physical health condition. There's a lot of assumptions built in there.
No, I understand that.
And so based on the photograph alone, it does not convey any of the required information within the definition of a a health record under the statute.
Would you agree that if this is published by a nurse and the nurse appears to be in scrubs and that the nurse's acquaintances know, presumably, where she works and the capacity in which she works, that a photograph that makes reference to a person and an obligation on the nurse to call 911 in response to somebody's conduct would suggest at least something occurred in the nurse's workplace?
I think one could make that inference, but I think there's a lot of leaps within those inferences.
My counsel's saying, look, this is Rule 12. Give me the chance to make those inferences. Give me the chance to do some discovery. Then we'll have a trial, and then we'll decide whether any of these assumptions that you say are apparent here are true.
That's correct, Your Honor, but there is no discovery that will turn this into a health record because there's always going to be those inferences.
What is happening? Let's assume that discovery reveals that this particular nurse realizes that individuals who follow her on Twitter are friends of hers who are aware of where she works and what she does and the nature of the clients with whom she interacts. Wouldn't that be a set of circumstances that might help to conclude about what inferences may or may not be drawn about what this communication says to its audience?
No, Your Honor, because there's still a number of leaps there. Even if she has a friend on Twitter who knows she worked at Madonna Summit and who maybe even knows the type of populations she works with, there is nothing about this record that on its face conveys that she was at work or that this individual...
Why not? What other circumstance would there be for the nurse to be required to contact 911 based upon someone else's conduct other than it being in her workplace? Give me an example.
Sure. I think, for example, she could be visiting another healthcare facility. Perhaps she could be visiting...
Why would someone who is visiting some other facility be required to take any responsibility? She says she now has to dial 911.
Had to is the words of the caption.
But you seem to be arguing that there's some other inferences that might be drawn other than that she's communicating about someone in her workplace. But at Rule 12, at this stage, aren't we to assume that in order for the district court to be affirmed, that there are no set of circumstances, that there's no possible evidence that might lead to the contrary inference that you're suggesting is possible?
What I'm saying is this amounts to a statutory interpretation, and so it's a legal question.
No, but you pointed out that inferences would have to be drawn in order to make this into a case of a healthcare record. And if inference, my question to you is, if there's a possibility for those inferences to be drawn with further fact development, isn't this a premature dismissal?
No, Your Honor. And while I acknowledge it's an unpublished decision, your colleagues in the Rhodes case addressed this exact issue and struggled with this exact question of there has to be some sort of limits. As everyone acknowledges, the definition of a health record under the statute is extremely broad, and you have to have some sort of limits, because otherwise the example of a person eating a cheeseburger may amount to a health record. The example of a picture of a person wearing eyeglasses may be a health record, even though it conveys no other information. And so there needs to be some sort of limits as to where liability rests and what the obligations are under the statute. And in the Rhodes case, your colleagues indicated that these type of inferences are not permissible because the statute is clear that on the face of the record, it needs to relate to health, provision of health care, or payment of health care.
Was Rhodes a decision based on Rule 12?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. And in that case, it actually conveyed more information. It conveyed that the person was a sex offender and that they actually were a resident and a patient of the facility. And there, the court found that there were too many inferences in that set of circumstances. And here we have even less facts and more inferences that would be well outside that line.
Well, we have conduct, don't we, that would suggest a mental health impairment?
It might suggest a mental health impairment, or it might suggest a difficult person. I mean, there's lots of reasons someone might pull a fire alarm. It doesn't mean that they have a mental health condition or any other reason that results to their health. They just might have a difficult personality, quite frankly. And so that's point number one. There's simply no health record here, and without a health record, there's no claim for an unauthorized.
What if in discovery, let's assume this were a different case, let's assume what had been included in the complaint was a list of Twitter statements that would suggest that this nurse has communicated on Twitter that she deals with difficult people with mental illnesses who do irrational things. And you have this communication as well. Would this then be closer to a health record?
It might be closer. I don't think it puts it over the edge, unless this statement said, there were those previous statements that you alluded to, I deal with difficult people, they have mental health conditions. And then in this statement, she said, oh, I had this person with X mental health who pulled the fire alarm. Yes, that is.
But what I'm getting at is that discovery might allow for other information, other statements made on Twitter by this same nurse, for example, might be discovered, which would lend context to her communication. It would tell us about who she believes her audience is It would help to know what inferences she might expect her audience to draw from this photograph and this caption, would it not?
It may inform the inferences, but I don't think it turns it into this particular record into a health record. And so that's the first question, or the first issue. There is no health record, and so there can't be a violation of the statute for disclosure of the alleged health record. The second piece of it is there's no mechanism for liability for Madonna Summit in these circumstances because the statute holds a person liable for the disclosure. And in this certain circumstance, certainly Madonna Summit is not a person, and it isn't the person who actually disclosed the record.
That seems taken straight from the Wills case.
It certainly is in line with the Wills case, yes, Your Honor.
In the statute that authorizes vicarious liability.
Correct, yes. That, and I would pose to the court that this is very similar to the Wills case. I know counsel for petitioner indicates that there wasn't a provider that the commissioner wasn't an actual provider, and here they are. That's irrelevant because the statute says person, not provider. And so certainly in the Wills case, the court could have found the commissioner to be liable if they thought it was appropriate.
This whole statutory scheme, has the legislature provided some kind of liability for providers under certain circumstances?
Certainly in the statutory provision where there is liability for licensing actions for providers. That one explicitly calls out that if there's a provider who engages in an unauthorized disclosure, there could be administrative and licensing issues. And you raise a good point there that certainly then the language is intentional because in subdivision one, they explicitly say provider. And then in subdivision two, they say person. And
although
so
it looks like subdivision one wouldn't really be applicable to anybody but a provider.
Correct, Your Honor. But my point is if the legislator intended to use the word provider or intended to include provider.
Thing is, provider was on the lips of the legislature in section one. And if they wanted it to apply to Section 2, it wasn't very difficult to say so.
Correct. Yes, Your Honor. And in any event, certainly Madonna Summit wasn't the person.
But what if the legislature wanted person to be more inclusive than provider? I mean, wouldn't you use the word? I mean, person, in the usual legal sense of the term, would include provider. It would also include individuals.
It certainly may, but in this circumstance, given the statutory scheme, I think the better reading is that a person is a natural person, and if you'll examine the Minnesota...
You want us to add a word to the statute?
No, Your Honor, I think...
Legislature could have said natural person.
They certainly could have, yes, but if you look at the Minnesota Health Records Act in general, there are other references to the word person, including in the definition section of... the Minnesota Health Records Act, this would be 144.292, and that's where it lays out, 292 is the wrong one. I apologize, 291, you're correct. And that's where it lays out the statutory definitions, and it doesn't define person.
So then why wouldn't we accept the general legislative definition of person applies if the legislature, why wouldn't we assume if the because the legislature did not define person narrowly in this case, that the legislature intended for the same definition of person to apply here as is applied in other cases using the general definition of person in the statutes?
Certainly there is, you know, the legislative rule that you reference that says that court may infer person may include a corporation or a business, but may is permissive. It's not necessarily. And if you look in the grander scheme of the Minnesota Health Records Act, you'll see references to the word person, for example, in provider, the definition of provider under 144.291. It says any person who furnishes health services regulated under specific chapters. And if you take a look at those chapters, those are all people.
That's that's what I thought. Those chapters are individual people.
Right, exactly. They're acupuncturists, they're social workers. And so it's inconsistent to use the word person in that instance, but then in the liability provision, use it to include a broader sense of businesses, especially when the legislator could have specifically stated provider or other natural person if they wanted to make it broader in that sense. So I see my time is up, but for those...
The view is the legislative intent here was the person who's actually doing the act has liability, but nobody else has liability.
Correct, Your Honor. And here that would be Jane Doe.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Sandberg, you have 5 additional minutes if you wish to use it.
Just 2 points. I think that it's important in this case to keep a distinction between how strangers are treated on one hand and friends on the other. The factual, the story is set forth in the complaint is dealing with social media and friends. It's not dealing with social media and strangers. What inferences might be drawn if the situation involves a stranger is one set. The inferences that can be drawn when it involves a friend is an entirely different set.
And when you say it, you mean by it, you mean the audience?
Yes, 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 yes. I think that there are certain inferences that could not be drawn in this case if the audience consisted of strangers, were strangers. But I'm saying that these inferences are reasonable inferences that can be drawn because the audience is an audience of friends.
So you're saying that it could be a health record if viewed by one person, but not a health record if viewed by another?
I don't see anything that the Court of Appeals has done or anything in this statute or the definition of a health care record that draws it quite as tightly as what I think Madonna Summit is drawing it for the court here, that somehow or another this has to land on a piece of paper. This definition of a health record is broad.
So you're suggesting the term, reading between the lines, you're saying that the clause relates to may depend upon the audience, and in that sense,
oh sure,
the document itself isn't necessarily dispositive one way or the other.
We live in a real world. We treat strangers different than we treat our friends.
Well, this is one of those legislative pronouncements that's as clear as mud.
Well,
so should we be looking at extrinsic evidence such as legislative history?
Well, there's, I guess I differ with you.
You can differ with me. Let's assume that we conclude that this is ambiguous. Should we be looking at legislative history?
My question to you, Judge, would be, where's the ambiguity? I don't think that I think the clarity of this statute is clear enough such that it doesn't rise to the quality
you agree
of
that
an
if
ambiguity.
We conclude that it's ambiguous.
Pardon?
You agree that if we conclude it's ambiguous, we can look at legislative history?
Sure you can. Sure you can. I don't quarrel with that. But what I'm saying is that...
Has anybody checked? Is there legislative history here?
No, haven't. Because I personally don't see any reason for it. It says provider or other person. What they're asking you to do here is to say that, well, the only people who can be liable under these circumstances, I know I'm talking more like a lawyer, but the only person who can be liable is a natural person. That's not the way this statute is written. This statute has a definition that defines for this court who is a provider. And Madonna Summit is a provider. They live subject to subdivision 2 as much as they live subject to subdivision 1. Thank you.
Thank you. The matter is submitted. We'll issue our decision within the statutory time frame, and we thank both of counsel for your briefing and argument. The third and last oral argument this morning is State versus, is it Bartel or Bartle?
Bartel, Your Honor.
Bartel. Madeline, you want to do some dishes here for us? Thank you. As counsel are getting situated, welcome to the Court of Appeals. My name is John Rodenberg. With me are Judges Ross and Klapacki. Each of you will, as you probably already know, have 15 minutes for principal argument. Appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if the appellant wishes to use that time. When you approach the podium, give us your name and identify the party you represent so that we've got that for our recording. The podium is adjustable with a little toggle switch that's located somewhere down below it. So we'll make sure it's at a comfortable height and speak directly into the microphone so we catch all that you say. With that, appellant may proceed whenever you are ready.